Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
You are listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a podcast about Linux, open source, and amateur radio for everyone. Now here are your hosts, Cheryl, W5MOO, and Bill, NE4RD.
Hello and welcome back, everyone, and thanks for joining us for this episode. This is episode 621 of Linux in the Ham Shack, the most terrific amateur radio podcast on the internet. This week, we're telling you about what we've been up to, along with looking at Oscar Watch as our featured topic. But before we get into that, we should introduce ourselves. For our silent key, Russ, K5TUX, I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD. And yes, welcome back. And this week. Actually, the last couple of days, let me tell you. I didn't know if I was going to make this because I was going to sleep through it. I really, really do. But we'll get into that when we talk about what we've done this week. So, Cheryl, why don't you go ahead and get us started?
Okay, I'll get us started. So for my food adventures this week, not much in that department. I had a hamburger and french fries that I fixed last night for dinner. And after the show tonight, I will be enjoying a garlic pork tenderloin with scalloped potatoes and some carrots. Otherwise, I've had quick lazy food like a bologna sandwich, bowl of cereal, breakfast burrito, those of which I made a few weeks ago and tossed in the freezer. Thankfully, our weather's not been conducive to doing much cooking. For computer stuff, I downloaded Oscar Watch last night, played with it a bit today. Sadly, no radios are online in the house until Bill gets here to get those reconnected, so I can only do so much with the program, but it looked okay. So for the radios, they're going to remain offline until Bill visits the next time and gets them hooked back up and figured out what Russ has done with them. So maybe get things a little more organized in that sense. And otherwise, it's fireworks season, and since we live in the country, everyone is shooting them off, huge ones that rattle my windows. The dogs are completely drugged up with the equivalent of doggy Xanax, and it's still not working. So I've got one sitting on my feet shaking right now. The weather has decided that Stormy is now off the table, and we're shooting straight into Ugg. In my Facebook memories today, I commented in 2011 that we were expected to have 100 plus degree temps with heat index being in the 120 degree range. And it did happen, regretfully. Luckily, this week we're going to be hovering in the mid 90s until the 4th of July. Then the 5th is supposed to go back into the upper 80s. Of course, I'm sure all these temps will include the Missouri sauna package with the 80% or higher humidity. Obviously, Russ moved to Missouri from Maine purely because of love, because our weather does not make it terribly hospitable. We live in the tornado belt. We rarely have snow, it's usually ice storms. And the summer humidity is gut-wrenching. But those 3 or 4 weeks throughout the year when the weather's nice, it's lovely. And that's it in my world.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, as I say this right now, as we record this right now, it's currently 64 outside, and tomorrow's high will be 59. So, yeah.
Hopefully that's what we get
a little cooler
in like 8 days or whatever, because yeah. they're saying upper 90s, you know, until the 5th or until the 4th. But right now it is 85 degrees. We are under a heat advisory, and this is 8 p.m. Central Time on Sunday night. And let me see here. What's our humidity level? I'm not seeing that. So... but yeah, not great. Yeah, it's miserable when you go outside. So.
Well, what was I going to talk about? Jeez. So the theater, which is the thing that takes most of my time during the week, we had this thing called a wet ink festival that started on Friday evening. That's basically where we have bunch of people come in. We do a little bit of improv skit based on some topics that people do or suggest from the audience. And then we have some writers put those ideas and those prompts into writing over the night. and produce a one-act play with the actors that have come to audition that night at the Improv. And Saturday morning, they show up bright and early, and they learn their lines and put on a show Saturday night. So I had the lovely job of doing the Friday night session, which was from, 6 p.m. to about 3 a.m., when the last writer left the building. And I don't normally stay up that late. So and then I had to be back Saturday morning at 10. Well, actually, I was there at 9 to open the building, make some coffee, and get it ready for breakfast for all of the actors. And I think the writers all did show up eventually as well. Probably slept in a little bit more. But yeah, that's why I'm dragging a little butt today. I'm still not back on my normal sleep schedule. So,
well, going to bed at 3 a.m. for you is basically your time when you get up, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like 2 hours from the time I normally get up.
Yeah.
So yeah, not a good idea for me to do that. So luckily, it's only like a once a year thing, and I've done my duty this year. So maybe by the end of next week, I'll be back to normal. We'll see.
Nice.
Anyway, let's get into our topic tonight. And as we discussed previously, we're going to go with the term featured topic. And we're going to 86 the whole deep dive, but essentially it's the same thing. And, you know, our deep dives are never that deep. we'll see how far we get in this particular one here. And what we're talking about this week is Oscar Watch by Peter Goodall, Mike 9, Sierra Quebec Lima. And you probably know Peter because we talked about him many times in the past, and we just talked about him about this project in the last episode. And then I also saw that it was linked in the show notes for ICQ Podcast as well in their episode a week ago or something like that. So apparently this is making the rounds, which is pretty cool. But what is Oscar Watch? So Sarah, why don't you tell us what Oscar Watch is?
Okay, Oscar Watch is a desktop satellite tracking for amateur radio operators. It shows where AMSAT spacecraft are, predicts passes over your station, works out Doppler-corrected uplink and downlink frequencies, and can drive your rotator and radio during a pass, all from one map-centered window.
Yeah, so basically, I know I wouldn't want to call it G-Predict with a fancy new skin, but essentially it does what G-Predict does as well. So it's not anything new, per se. There are some very interesting things about this software, which we'll get into. But let's kind of talk a little bit about how you get this software, how you install it, and of course, how you get it running the first time. Because you had a problem with that.
That was a user issue. So, because, you know, after I messaged you and you went, this is how you do that, I kind of went, oh, I had so much stuff going on last night when I was trying to get it to work that I was just like, what? And I told you, I'm probably missing something. Yeah, I was definitely missing something. So
on the GitHub page, you have a couple of different options. You can just GitHub clone it down, and if you happen to have .NET installed on your Linux box or Mac or Windows, whatever you're doing, you can compile it yourself. And that's right, I did say .NET, and here we are on Linux doing .NET. And guess what the toolkit is? Avalonia. Which we have done a featured topic on, and yes, I'll call it a featured topic, the GUI toolkit for doing a .NET cross-platform GUIs for the desktop. And this one is done exactly the same way. You can do it with a .NET build, or you can download the actual release. So the release that was available to the day that we both got it, because I believe this was just 3 days ago, there was a release of 0.8.13. And then if you click into the releases, you'll see that there is one, there's several different builds that are provided here. One for the ARM64, which of course is for your Raspberry Pi. The X64 for Linux is obviously for the desktop Linux, unless you happen to be running some 32-bit version of Linux. In that case, you're on your own. there is an ARM build for Mac, and also an X64 build for Mac, which I would assume is the Intel Macs. And then you'll also see that there is a Windows X64 build. So those are all pre-packaged, pre-compiled, and essentially should run out of the box. Now, when you download it, you download the tarball. The tarball isn't set up to make a directory. So if you happen to untar it in a directory, it will fill the directory with all the files, which there are quite a few of the files in that download. And I'm just going to do a quick go into my directory and just take a look at how many there are. Yeah, there is about several pages worth in my LS here. So you definitely want to put this into a different directory. So make a directory and untarball it there. And like any compiled .NET project, you're going to see a bunch of DLL files. So it might seem a little strange when you run it and you see all these DLL files instead of like an SO file that we're used to seeing for shared objects and stuff like that. But you do get a compiled binary for execution, and it's cleverly called OscarWatch. And at that point, you can either ./it, or you should be able to double click it. It should show up as an executable file. And if you wanted to make a desktop icon for it, depending upon which graphical user interface that you're using for Linux, you could create a desktop file and put that in the right shared library, and you would be able to just have an icon on your desktop or more menu, what have you. But it's not set up really to create its own menu item and stuff like that. I didn't even see any of that in there. Yeah, I didn't see any of that in there in the files for right now. But that might be on the roadmap. So let's just take a quick look at, let's see, which screen am I on? 5,000 different screens. So in this particular version, what was added? So we had Doppler pass insights and analysis were added, tuning dial handling and pass band adjustments, Doppler logic and mode fixes, rotator and standby enhancements, and UI styling and localization. So this is an active development. Obviously, we're not to a 1.0 release. So maybe some of the things that we're going to run over when we talk about the issues that we've run into, which I don't know if Cheryl's run into any issues particularly with it.
Not yet.
Okay, so good. Yeah. I've only run into it like a couple of little things that I thought were odd, but we'll kind of go from there. So when you launch it, it essentially will open up a window. It'll give you the map of the world. I was going to say the United States.
Yeah.
The map of the world with a default location. And I believe there was 3 satellites when I first turned this on. Actually, the ISS, AO7, and I think SO50, perhaps.
Yeah, I think so.
Sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah.
Across the top, you have like a normal Windows application. You have a file, a menu structure here. The file has an import and export capability if you're going to be importing, exporting your settings or a transponder database. The next item would be satellites. From there, you can select which satellites you're following. You can manage your transponder database. You can refresh your TLEs. Those are your telemetry files. And you can update the transponder database in that satellites section there. So if we go into select satellites, just so we can see that, once you've done the updates, because it's always recommended to do that anyway, the first time you run the app, it'll show you all the satellites that you possibly can track with this software. And I'm not sure if you, well, obviously you can import new ones if you wanted ones other than the ones that are in this list. It does give you an option to select from, I guess we'll go into in settings. So maybe we'll get to settings after. Well, I'm going to do this all out of order. Anyway, you select your satellites. We'll call it good. If you happen to add new satellites, you'll have to go back into your select satellites and get them on your display. So right now I have everything that is default in the system, and I have them all selected so I can see a very noisy, colorful screen in front of me. And it is kind of, it's kind of neat because all of the satellites that are currently being tracked have different footprints, obviously, but the colors of the footprints are different as well. So it makes all the satellites look unique on there instead of all being like the same color. So it is visually pleasing. The passes thing is a drop down as well. And you have a pass planner and you can add multiple locations, I clicked ahead of something. So you can have multiple locations. You can make sure when you have your location, you set your time zone and everything else. It shows which satellites are going to be passing. You can actually click add these to calendars, which saves out an ICS file that you would have to import. So it's not really native calendaring chatting between applications, which is good. It shows you the when the signal is going to be acquired, when it's going to be lost, the azimuth, the max elevation, the duration of the pass. All of that stuff is in those pass lists. The next one down is a mutual pass planner. So if you're trying to work somebody, you can actually plan that and have that calculate out when you can possibly work them, which is kind of neat. You have a sunlight prediction. Sunlight. Did I say sunlight? I think it's a sunlight, right? Yeah. Sunlight prediction. Yeah. I believe this is, I have no idea what this means.
I noticed earlier as things were passing overhead.
Yeah.
You know, it would say over in the live area, it would say sunlight. And like, for instance, right now, the LASAR sat is near me. A few seconds ago, it said sunlight. Now it says eclipse. So maybe that's maybe you're not going to be able to
maybe
see
the satellite easily. Is in sunlight at that time or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because the LASAR is now about halfway across the ocean, so not quite, but well off the coast of the United States. So.
Yeah. So that's why as I'm clicking these, I see that too, like the satellites in sunlight and stuff like that.
Right.
So, yeah, maybe that's interesting. Let's see. Doppler pass insights. This is for loading. Let's see. Load a pass log to see clear tuning advice for adaptive threshold and lead Doppler cat settings. So I believe this is to customize your particular location's Doppler shift. And also deals with the cat latency, so the latency between your controller or your radio, your rig control. And as a tuning guide, a chart, an analysis, and files. So that is pretty complex and cool. Yeah. I will definitely say I have not worked satellites since the 90s, so I'm not totally up on how everything works these days with all this fancy software. We didn't have this fancy stuff back then. But I've always kind of looked at it and I've always been interested in it, but, let's go to the next item, which would be settings. So this is where you set up your station for the first time. And this window is shown to you, I believe the very first time that you open the application.
It did not show up for me.
Didn't show up for you. Okay.
I had to go in and actually find it in order to set my latitude and longitude and stuff.
So it may have it or may not. This might be related to a bug. Or possible bug that I saw when I was running this. It saved a settings file in a different location than where it's supposed to save it. So it could be related to that. But anyway, the station settings comes up. Let me just make sure. It did say station settings, right? It just says settings.
It just says settings, yeah.
So settings opens up a dialog window. First tab is station. So the station, you're going to set your display name. So I just put my call sign, although I don't see it actually saying my call sign on the map, which is weird. But
yeah, no, cool. I set mine to a couple of different things and it just shows a little blue dot.
Just a dot, yeah. Yeah. Nice part is you can either plug in your Jeep, your latitude and longitude manually here, or you can just pop in your grid square and it'll auto move your dot to where it needs to be. And then it has your altitude above sea level in meters. So you need to make sure you convert from imperial units to meters. The next little tab is for the TLE. So this is where you get your source for your satellites. Currently, by default, it's set to Oscar Watch. So he's keeping a database there on his website, tle.oscarwatch.org. You can switch it to AMSAT or custom URL or local file. So you have some options there to have your satellite list and your TLEs. And then it also has a setup setting here for your TLE update schedule. And the options are either manual, on startup if older than 6 hours, or every 6 hours while running. So if you have this on a computer and it's just constantly running, then you can, it'll just update the TLEs every 6 hours. All right, tracking. What do we got here? So we have tracking. So we have a minimum elevation at which you start tracking. So this would impact your rotor and everything else. So if you have it set to like I can't work things because I'm in a valley, and let's say it has to be above 10 degrees. I could set that in there. And you can also set how long you want your past prediction window to show data. So if you want it to be 48 hours out, 24 hours out, whatever, you can set those defaults right here inside of tracking. In appearance, apparently you only have a selection of the language English UK style, not English USA. We'll see after the FIFA World Cup finishes out who's English we're using. No. you also have a Portuguese, Espanol, and it looks like I'm going to say, yeah, a couple of different Asian languages there that are actually in the symbol format. And if I were saying that, it's probably Japanese and Korean. Perhaps. I could be wrong, though.
I looked that up the other day, and I completely forgot what it was.
You have a clock format. You can do 24-hour or 48, or the 48-hour. You can tell I'm tired. 12-hour or 24-hour. You can show times in Zulu time or local time. You can change the theme. Right now, by default, it follows the system. So if you're in dark mode, it'll give you a dark mode look. If you want to change it to light mode, you can change it there. If you want it to be opposite of your system, you can whatever. You have the option of system, light, and dark. So that is all yours. You have ability to show footprint and motion arrows. You can turn that on or off. So that's kind of cool. And you have the show day, night, gray line on the map. And you also have the check for updates while on startup or daily running as an option to check. The next tab is voice. So you can actually have voice announcements and you can have it announce based upon elevation. And you have some choices of voices. Yeah, lots of choices of voices. So that's kind of cool. And you can test it there. Over on the radio tab, which is the next one, is the radio control. Now this is not using AMLIB. So this has a very specific set of radios and a dummy rig connection. And I did pull out the notes for this because I thought this was, so yeah, it's a computer program. A computer program. Steve, where are you? Yes, this is software. So why does it not use AMLIB? AMLIB is a good fit for plenty of general rig control. So this is from Peter, and it's on the GitHub page. Satellite passes are not one of them. You are not only setting a frequency on VFOA. Yeah, UK spelling it. Oh, program, yeah. Programmy. You're not only setting a frequency on VFOA, you need a satellite mode, sensible RXTX routing, split or VFO exchange, uplink tone when the mode needs it, and Doppler with a TX fixed or an RX fixed plan, often with rig-specific CAT quirks on top. Trackers that handle a pull request to fix his spelling on that one. Trackers that handle satellite work to Hamlib have, in my experience, often lacked the right commands, mishandled VFO layout, or let Doppler slip during a real pass. Oscar Watch uses native drivers per protocol. This is using iRig driver and shared pass logic in the rig controller. See building radio drivers for how that is structured. Pull requests for more native rig support are welcome. Hamlib backend is not on the roadmap. Now, I find that disappointing only due to the fact that the way I use GPredict is because I do have rig capable of doing the satellite stuff. What I normally have is I have SDR++ running, and because I just want to listen to the satellite. And that's what I have set up as the rig control. So I actually have that support, Hamlib. And then I have GPredict dialing that when the satellite passes over, because I don't have one of these supported rigs, which the supported rigs are the ICOM IC9100, the 91910, the IC9700, the IC8821H, the FT847, and the Kenwood TS2000. You do have the ability to do a dual rig setup as well, which is nice. That gives you options of several other rigs, but I don't know if you could. So this will give you like two 817s, two FT817s, two Yaesu FT18s, two Yaesu, or a combination of other radios. So you can set your downlink radio and your uplink radio independently, and those are a subset of radios. So yeah, that's interesting. That's just an interesting choice. It wouldn't fit my particular use case, but I can appreciate why it was done. The rotator, same kind of deal. Not sure why rig control or rotor control D couldn't have been used. And it does elevation azimuth, but he does have support for the Yaesu GS232. An SPID, so a ROT1 prog and a ROT2 prog, and then an EasyCom for selection. Recording. So it can do automatic pass recording, including on which audio device you're going to be pulling from and what format and how you want to have the recording start and finish and so on and so forth. And then integrations. This will be where you can, you can integrate it with hams.at. It shows upcoming satellite rows from hams.at. Never been to this site. I want to take a look at it now. Only alerts marked workable for your hams.at location are listed. Set your location at hams.at if none appear. If your API key is stored locally in the settings and other migrations. So that, I guess that's for trying to work other people and doing coordination on that. As well as integration for CloudLog, and Peter wrote CloudLog, so that makes complete sense. And also has the ability to connect directly to a GPS in the integrations, and that's where you're going to set it here in the saving and in the settings. Now, once you've gone through all of those tabs, you just hit the save button, and you're off to the races. And I was looking at one option where it says the direction, and I didn't quite see what he meant. But now I look at all of the icons here, because we got these little dots floating all over the screen, and they have like a little arrow attached to each dot to show you which direction the satellite is moving. Because some satellites don't move very fast, and then the ones that are geostationary do not really have arrows. Or they have very, very, very tiny arrows because they're moving very slow, which is also kind of a neat display here, because I'm seeing big arrows on these that seem to be moving pretty fast. Is there a small arrow there or not? You know what? I think I might be wrong on the arrows. I think if the arrow is hidden underneath the label, which that's what it appears to be, you just don't see the arrow. Yeah. Interesting. So Cheryl.
Yes.
Hey, you're there. Good. anything else that you wanted to point out about the settings and getting things kind of clicking around and stuff like that within the context there?
No, it the settings and stuff seemed fairly intuitive. And I did look up, it's Chinese and Japanese on the language.
Okay.
So.
Wasn't sure.
Yeah, there you go. As far as the setting up process, which I could only go so far because I obviously don't have radios to hook to it. It was pretty intuitive. Again, I would have expected in the settings for, you know, your information to pop up so you could go ahead and enter it as that opening window, but it didn't show up for me. Maybe that's a glitch. Maybe that's something to do with Manjaro, because, you know, sometimes it can be kind of painful. But otherwise, you know, and I did notice the little arrows when I first started it up, so, which I thought was kind of cool, because I was like, oh, well, there's dots and then there's arrows. And then I noticed that some of those arrows were, you know, the circles around those satellites were moving. I was like, oh, okay, so those must be the ones that are moving at a decent clip or moving period. But so, yeah, but, you know, most of the satellites that I'm seeing on my screen currently are just stationary or so close to not moving that it's not funny. I did notice in the satellite list, when you can go in and select the satellites that you want, which there's dozens and dozens and dozens there, it seems like some of them are popping up with a stale TLE. So I'm not sure if that's normal for them. They're just not sending out anything, you know, to say where they're at or whatever's going on with that. But there's probably six. That looks like, yeah, six.
I think that might be that they haven't received an update or has not received telemetry updates. And this can be just like the satellite's transponders not transponding.
Working, right. Right.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, I'm trying to look up one that is stale right now. And that looks like Green Cube IO 117. And I don't think it looks like it's an active satellite anymore. So that's probably why.
But, you know, the basic window, you know, I like the way it's set up. I like the fact that the satellites are there in different color, you know, so that way you're not trying to guess, you know, which satellite is actually showing up where, because some of them do overlap because of, you know, where they're stationed at. And I like the part down at the bottom of the main page where it gives you the upcoming pass, how long it's going to take for the pass, what the elevation's going to be. So, you know, that part is nice. So, and it, you know, so, you know, for instance, like the AO91 is basically passing right now. Yeah.
Okay, so you should see a polar plot then too, right? So you have a sky plot as well, where it is in the sky.
Yeah. So, but it says that it's, you know, it's a max elevation of 7 degrees, and it's a 4-minute duration of it passing. And I can see, you know, it's going to be gone pretty quick, but within the next 2 minutes. But and yeah, then, you know, so
on the main page you have like a live show on the right hand side. So there's a little tab or a column of data, and in that is the currently selected satellite. Click on one, it'll highlight the satellite information right at the top of the screen. If it happens to be one that's passing over, you'll have a sky plot and it'll fill it in with the dot of the actual satellite and also the path of the satellite, which is in relationship to your location. So a very, very similar polar plot that you would see on GPredict. And then the upcoming passes are pretty much in sequence of them coming into your area. So you can get a quick glance at stuff. You can just kind of scroll down, and that's what that setting for like how far out you want that list to appear that gives you a good peek at what's going to happen without having to actually pull into your pass planner and stuff like that and look at your passes. So overall, I would say that the application is quite nice. Quite nice looking. It's very pleasant to the eye. It's definitely more modern using modern UI toolkit using Avalonia. I've installed it on an Ubuntu box running KDE, and I've also installed it here on my Shack computer, or not my Shack, my rig, my podcasting computer, which is running Omarchi with Hyperland, and it looks exactly the same in both places, and it hasn't really freaked out anything except for the dialogue window does kind of create a window in the hovering window in the center of my screen. But that's pretty normal. That's what it's supposed to do. Sometimes if it comes up as a window, it would create a new tiled entity or tiled window within the context of my particular desktop, because it is weird. But yeah, it seems to be handling everything pretty fine. I've been I did restart it while we were talking on the podcast here, but I had been running it solid for like a few hours, and I haven't really noticed any problems with it. It's not like it's stuttering the system or doing anything weird. So quite good stuff. Now let's talk about some of the oddities. Well, I guess I wanted to say one more thing. There is a really cool operator guide that I didn't really find until I started looking at the menu at the top. So there's a whole help section there. Let's see. Let's go back into the screen. So yeah, there's a help menu item as well. That's where you'll find the operator guide, the check for updates, your release notes about Oscar Watch. You're opening your recording folder, so little shortcuts there to get to your recordings folder, your log folders, and there's also an option to copy diagnostics, which I would assume be for troubleshooting or whatever. I would really expect the open folders options to actually be in the file section, so maybe for user experience, that seems like a weird place to put that. So I'll list that as one of the oddity items. But the Oscar Watch help is basically an HTML file that opens up in a browser. So this is pretty nice. It gives you all kinds of information, how to get quick start, like what do you do before a pass, 5 to 10 minutes before acquisition of signal, what do you do during a pass and after the pass. So it kind of gives you a lot of information on not only the application, but like how to use the application in the process of making your contact and operating all of your connected equipment with the software. Lots of stuff here. I like it. So the other thing that I noticed with the software when I was just chatting before we started recording, and I was trying to figure out where it was saving the settings file. And on a Linux box, it should be saving most likely in your profile directory, your /home/user.config directory. And you'll have a directory in there called Oscar Watch. And within there, you'll find your logs, your settings file, your satellite database JSON, and like a backup of your settings file. But I noticed I had a lingering file that got created in my /user/home. So my /home/ne4rd directory called OW settings. And I'm not sure why it created one there. It seems like maybe it did it. It didn't do it on the first time because I was looking at the file timestamps. It must have did it on the second time I launched the application for some reason. So that might be a weird bug, because I just changed the settings again. And it's not doing anything with the settings file here. Let me just make sure I didn't export it. It could have been me. Maybe that's what it is. I bet you I did test the export. Export settings. And yes, it's in the home directory. That's my fault. That's what I did.
User error. Yeah,
look at that. I thought it was a bug, and that's just me being an idiot. How about that? Yep, and you can save that there. Okay, so it is interesting seeing the file save dialogues are a little different using Avalonia versus some of the system stuff here. So that's neat. Okay, so that is normal behavior. So when you export it, automatically goes to your root of your home directory, and that's where you'll save your settings files and your satellite transponder data when you export. And that's probably let's see if that's where it's going to import from to. Let's see, by default, import settings. Yes, that's exactly what it does. It has the recent directory, so it saves whatever directory you were in recently. And there's cool. Well, I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I noticed with the application, and I can't think of anything. Anything else that you have about Oscar Watch that we need to mention?
Not that I can think of. It's, you know, I like it. So again, I don't get a whole lot of use out of it, but it is, again, as I said, it's nice not having all the satellites all being piled up in the same color. You know, you can actually tell where things are due to the little color scheme that they've got going here. But so
yeah,
that is definitely nice. And it's pretty.
It is pretty.
It is very pretty. So, but so yeah, it's, you know, if somebody told me this is the program that you need in order to do satellite watching, I would download it and be impressed. So again, the recordings folder and the logs folder and stuff probably shouldn't be under help, but I guess at least it's there. So
yeah, you get,
you know,
easy,
so you
access
have to go to dig for it, you know. So yeah, but
yeah, the only other thing I noticed that I think would be kind of cool as well is if the map could recenter itself based upon your location instead of just having a static map.
Oh, so yeah, no, that would be nice. Yeah.
So I noticed that's kind of, I guess, weird for me, you know. But maybe, like, you know, he wanted to show Britain as the center of the universe.
Well, and that's, yeah, that's, I would say, probably...
You know, it, you is know, the center
because it,
of time,
it is
right?
Center from where he is. So, yeah. You know, so, yeah, the rest of us just kind of get chucked in there wherever we're at. But, you know, so it's not a deal breaker. It would be nice, though, if, you know, if you could set where you needed to be on the map, basically, whether you needed it centered or whatever. But,
well, you could set your location. So you have your dot showing. It's just that it doesn't recenter the map based upon your dot. I think that's the only thing I think would be a plus, to have it centered on your home location, which would be more intuitive to like other applications that do this kind of mapping thing as well. Normally you can have it center on your location. And I'm trying to click various things on the map itself, and
yeah, so am I trying to get it to move, and yeah, it's just not going anywhere. So
yeah, the other thing that pops up, and I don't think I mentioned it, is when you click on a satellite for a pass, it makes a little dialog box. Well, not a dialog, but like a hovering box over the map showing the frequency of the radio, your uplink, your downlink, as well as if there's a different transponder mode that has a drop down to switch transponder modes. And that's also where you'll see your frequency will be moving, and you can set up your TX, your RX, your full radio control. Everything else can be done there. And if you have like a offset that you need to plop in there, you can do that. It'll store the offset for you. But yeah, this is pretty slick. I like the looks of it. I like the whole idea of using Avalonia too. I know we talked about that in detail. I don't even remember what episode that was. Let's see, what was LHS podcast.info Avalonia? Pretty sure we did, yeah, 564. So, yeah, that was about a year and a half ago now that we talked about Avalonia. And I started playing with it, and then I got busy doing other things, and I never really messed with it after that. So I'm kind of I'm kind of excited to see somebody playing with it and putting out a really cool application. And I'm looking forward to how Peter goes along with this or moves forward with this application. See what other people are going to put in there as pull requests and see how this grows. Because I don't think we can have enough of these satellite tracking apps. I think they're just cool information. Even if you don't have radios connected, it would be very awesome to have the ability to connect it to an SDR for just showcasing or demoing it to other people in places that you wouldn't necessarily have your satellite rigs and everything else with you. So that would be my only thing that I'd be like, oh, that'd be cool if it could really use Hamlib in that, like, just one use case. Or if it actually like that SDR, what was the SDR tracking? There was an SDR tracking satellite tracker that had an SDR built into it. But anyway, that would be perhaps another thing that that could be put into it, is actually just native connection to an SDR and being able to use your SDR during the pass and having the waterfall in it. But, you know, maybe this is version 2.0 or something. Something like that. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at his roadmap here, so maybe that's something we should look at real quick here. I think he did publish a roadmap in this. Let's see. Getting started, features, supported hardware. We talked about that. Rotor settings, GPS, voice settings, contributing. I don't see a roadmap. So there's no roadmap in here, but there is a way to commit, and there is a contribution guide as well in here. So if you want to contribute to the software project, he has that in there. He has the developer documentation is all in there for building your own rotator drivers, your radio drivers, your Doppler cat lead tuning. Information is all in there. This is well documented. Looks like he's using Cursor too, because he's got Cursor rules checked in. Definitely using some AI assistant here. But as we discussed in the security review, he didn't have any major issues with the security, unlike a lot of the other software that we looked at. So just remember that in the hands of somebody that is as a capable programmer, AI is fine. At least to some extent. Yeah, I don't see a roadmap. That's kind of interesting. This is a GPL V3 adjacent here. Let's see, license. Yeah. It's copyright Peter Goodall, but it's free software. You can redistribute it under the terms of the GNU Afero General Public License 3P. So it's AGPL version 3 or later. And they have a license file here as well. And the third-party components included in this are Orbit Tools, Avalonia, TLA Sources, Map Imagery, etc. And they have their own licenses, and those are credited in the credits file. So check that out if you're interested in that. But yeah, this is great. I really like it. I'm going to probably use this. I might even have it at the National Scout Jamboree on one of the TVs showing the satellites. Ooh. So, yeah, I'm, I like it. I like it. I like it a lot. Good job, Peter. This looks pretty sharp.
Yeah, it does look really sharp. So
cool. Well, I don't think we have anything, to add to that. I don't see any extra notes in the chat room, so let's move on to announcements and feedback.
Okay, well, as always, we need help to support the show, and you can do that via Patreon, PayPal, buying some merch, or sharing the podcast via social media and rating us in your podcast application. We need feedback, comments, questions, show topic ideas. You can always email us those at info@lhspodcast.info. And as I continually repeat, we're having a memorial service for Russ, K5TUX, at our home in Mount Vernon, Missouri on November 1st, 2026. Everyone is welcome. If you'd like to join us, you can either send an email to info@lhspodcast.info, or you can visit the Facebook event page. And that link will be in the show notes.
And let's see, feedback. I didn't see anything new in the feedback. I just looked at. Well, there is one technically. There is one feedback here.
Well,
I was just looking at the community page in our YouTube channel because we do publish all the episodes to YouTube, and I see that Turtle Waxed has said thanks. I didn't know about Meshy Face. This is on episode 620. I didn't know about Meshy Face. We'll have to check it out. LHS rocks. Smiley face. So yeah, thank you there, Turtle Waxed, for that comment. That's a month ago. Yeah, so we have some older comments in here, but I believe we have covered all of these with additional context. So that all looks good. And I'll try to make sure I pay attention to that more. I just thought about that as we're doing this, and my brain is still half asleep. And yeah, I apologize. I apologize if things were scattered at times during this episode. but let's get on to subscribers and supporters. We had a really quiet week. Now, we did record on Tuesday this week, right? Was that Tuesday right. Recorded?
Yeah.
So we recorded just a few days ago. So not much has changed since then. We did have one person add us on Mastodon, and that is K-E-A-O, so Keo at Cainandable.social. Thanks for joining us over there on Mastodon. No new Discord people, and our live show participants are Tony, K4XSS, Mike, K6GTE, and Steve, KJ5T. And with that, I think you can wrap this up.
Okay, yep, we're done. So that brings us down to the end of the show. Thanks for listening to episode 621. We'll catch you next time with our Weekender episode. For us, K5TUX, I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD73.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a community-sponsored podcast. Live recordings are Sunday nights at 8 o'clock Central Time. Our homepage can be found at lhspodcast.info. You can support the podcast via Patreon at patreon.com/lhspodcast. We're also on Discord, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Mastodon. Contact us via email at info@lhspodcast.info or via voicemail at 1909-547-7469. That's 1909-LHS-SHOW. We also have merch. So until next we meet, remember to always heed your hedonism.